What a cool story. Somebody in our community living out their faith. And it was kind of cool because I got to see it up close when we were in Guatemala a couple weeks ago. And to see Rachel living out her faith in such a tangible, practical way. To see what she's doing is benefiting people. Like it's good, it's useful for people in their lives. As we started this series last week out of the book of James, we saw that James said, look, our faith has to be lived out. Like it has to be something that works, that's beneficial, that's useful for people. And if it's not, if it's a faith that's just up here or just in here, but it's never really lived out, then that's just, that's dead faith. And in fact, James was pretty bold. He said, one day we're going to stand before God and God's going to look at us and he's going to say, man, it's so important what you believe and what your convictions are, but what I want to know is, did you demonstrate and live out what you believed? Because if you didn't, if faith is just about what you believe, if it's just in your head or your heart, then that's not really living faith. That's dead faith. So our prayer last week was, God, would you take our faith and can we just surrender it to you? And would you help begin to show us what it looks like for each one of us to learn in our own lives, in light of our own gifts, in light of our own circumstances, what it looks like to begin to live out faith here in the real world of our lives. Now this week, we're going to jump back into James, and we're going to start at the very beginning of the book. So if you brought a Bible, you can turn to James chapter 1. If you just want to grab a pew Bible, you can do that. It's on page 846 in your pew Bibles. And the whole book of James is a letter that's chock full of practical advice. And so the big idea is this idea that faith, if it's not lived out, faith without works or without deeds, it's dead faith. And so James writes to a bunch of Christians. He says, let me tell you what it looks like to live out your faith in the messiness and in the details of every single day of your life. So with that in mind, let's jump into James chapter 1, starting in verse 1. This is what he says. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. Greetings. So, he's starting off a letter. This is just a normal letter, and this is the way you start off a letter back then. And what you need to know is a little bit about this guy named James. He was actually the leader of the church in Jerusalem, which was the very first church. And so he was the pastor or the chief elder or the chief leader there, the chief shepherd in that church. And this letter is actually one of the oldest writings we have in the New Testament. It's a little bit misleading because it's in the very back of the Bible. It's one of the last books in the New Testament, but they didn't put the books in chronological order or when they were written. There's a different ordering to them. But actually, James wrote his letter very early on to some Jewish Christians around the Roman Empire. And he wrote this before any of the Gospels were written. He wrote this before any of Paul's letters were probably written. In fact, this might be the earliest writing we have in the New Testament from the early church. Now, he's writing actually to Jewish Christians because it's so early. This is maybe 10 years after Jesus rose from the dead and the church began and it started. And at that time, most of the Christians were Jews. So there were people just like the disciples, just like Jesus, that came from a Jewish background. They had Jewish beliefs. And yet at some point in their life, they came to believe that this guy named Jesus really was the Messiah. And so they put their faith in him and they began to follow Jesus, but they didn't stop going to the synagogue and they didn't stop believing all their Jewish beliefs and all their Jewish customs as they had before. They were Jewish Christians. And yet they began to be persecuted for their faith. A lot of the other people that were Jews didn't like this. And so their families began to ostracize them as they followed Jesus. And they began to get kicked out of the synagogues. And they began to be persecuted for what they believed. And then some of them even got martyred and stoned for their faith. And when the persecution got so bad in the area of Jerusalem and Judea, many of them fled to other nations and other areas. In fact, today we would call them refugees. They were basically refugees fleeing the violence and the persecution that was coming at them because of their faith. And so James writes to this group of refugees scattered among the nations. Now, they were going through a tough time, not just because they were being persecuted, but also because they were actually very poor. We know from some other pieces that we're going to read later in the book of James that most of these believers were poor. They didn't have much money. They had left their families. They had left their jobs. They had left everything they had, and many of them had come into new areas, and so they were very impoverished. And in fact, we know that some of them got jobs almost like day laborers. So they would find some wealthy landowner or someone who had a lot of money. They would go get a job with that landowner, and they would work all day long. And then at the end of the day, when it was time to get paid, they wouldn't get paid. Because the landowner knew that he could just take advantage of them because they were these poor Jewish Christians, and there was nothing that they could do about it. So James is writing to these people who are persecuted for their faith. Physically, they're going through a tough time. Financially, they're going through a tough time. And maybe it's in light of that that he knows if he's going to help them live out their faith, maybe the very first thing, maybe the most important thing that he could address about a living faith in the real world is the trials that they're going through. So look at what he says in the next verse, verse 2. He says, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds." Now, if that's the first time you've read it, or whenever the first time was that you read that, it's a little bit like, huh? Like, are you crazy? Like, consider it pure joy when we go through trials? And maybe the people that received this letter the first time got the letter, and they thought the same thing. When they read it, it was like, James, do you understand our situation? Like, you know the persecution. You know what we've left. You know what we're facing. You know these people that are oppressing us and beating us down. You know that we basically have nothing left to hope for in this world. And you're telling us to consider it, like, joyful and happy and great. And they might have been tempted to just write James off or blow him off because he writes this. And we might be tempted to do that, except we need to know a little bit more about this guy named James. Because you see, he was the leader in the church of Jerusalem, and when all the persecution took place there, and when everyone else scattered, he stayed. And he decided to shepherd the few people who did stay. And so every single week, there were people in his congregation persecuted for their faith, some of them even being stoned and martyred for his faith, for their faith. And James had to deal with that. Another interesting fact, James was the brother of Jesus. You see, after Mary and Joseph, we all know the Christmas story, they had Jesus, they actually had several other children. And James was one of them. And so technically, if you believe in the virgin birth thing, James was technically the half-brother of Jesus. But either way, he grew up with Jesus, and Jesus was his older brother. Now, can you imagine that for a second? Can't you be more like your brother, James? Like, can you imagine growing up under the shadow of Jesus as your older brother? And yet the Bible tells us that even as they grew up, and even as they got older, and even as Jesus became this teacher or this rabbi, and then began to walk around and go around Israel and started his public ministry, that it says James wasn't buying it. He didn't believe in him. He didn't think there was anything special about him, which is interesting. I mean, he grew up with Jesus, and yet James didn't think there was anything all that special about him. Now, we don't know this. The Bible is silent on this event. But you have to wonder if James was there in Jerusalem when Jesus was arrested. And if he saw his own older brother. We know Mary, his mother, was there. You got to wonder if James saw his own brother tried and beaten and ultimately crucified. And did something happen as James stood at the foot of that cross watching his older brother be crucified? Or maybe something happened a few days later where we do know, Paul actually tells us, that the living Jesus, like in the flesh, raised from the dead, showed up and appeared to his brother James. And certainly at that point, James began to believe. and he decided, you are the Messiah, and I'm going to follow you the rest of my life. You're not just my brother, like, you are the Messiah, and I'm going to follow you the rest of my life, and I'm going to be a leader in your church, and I'll do whatever it takes to continue leading your church. And historians actually tell us a little more about James's life. Not just Christian historians, actually Josephus, a Jewish historian, writes about James as the leader of the early church in Jerusalem. And he tells us a few years after James wrote this letter to these Christians that he began to be persecuted for his faith. And the Jewish leadership finally got so fed up with the early church there in Jerusalem that they took James to the top of the temple and they threw him down on the ground in front of the crowds. And as he was laying there, barely breathing, holding on to dear life, they all picked up stones and they stoned him. You see, this is a guy who knows what trials are and what trials are about. And so there's maybe no more credible person who could have written these words and said, you know what? When you go through trials, you need to consider it a joy. Which doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be happy. It doesn't mean you're going to feel joyful about it. It doesn't mean you should get warm fuzzies every time you go through a difficult trial. It means you need to start having a different attitude, that something needs to change in your mind. You need to start considering this trial that you're going through differently. And what kind of trials is James talking about? He says, whenever you face trials of many kinds, not if you face trials, but when you face them, not whenever you face the really big trials in life, but when you face basically any kind of trials. Which means if James was here tonight, I think he would look at all of us and he would say, you know what? Whenever you face a difficult day at work, whenever you face a difficult person at work, whenever you face an empty checking account, whenever you face an illness or a sickness or some kind of health issue, whenever you face a weekend with the in-laws or a week with the in-laws, whenever you face kids who are disobedient once again, whenever you face the reality that this relationship that you've put a lot of hope in is not going to turn out to be what you want it to be once again, whenever you lose your job, whenever you lose a friend, whenever you lose a loved one, or maybe just whenever you lose your wallet or your purse. Like, whenever you face any kind of trial every single day of your life, when you're just living life in the real world that's messy, whenever you face things that are frustrating, that don't go according to plan, that are not working out, I want you to start having a different attitude. I want you to begin to consider trials differently. And let me tell you why. He goes on in verse 3 to say, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. You see, James would say the reason that you need to have a different attitude towards trials is because God has a different attitude towards your trials. And whenever we go through difficult things, we might be tempted to think, well, maybe I did something wrong and like God is punishing me or karma's coming back at me. Or maybe God doesn't care, or maybe he doesn't really love me like people say he does, or maybe he just overlooked me or he forgot about me. And yet James says, no, that's not the attitude you should have. God, it's not that God is punishing you. It's not that he doesn't care. It's not that he's overlooked you. In fact, God is very focused on you right now. And the reason is because God has a unique attitude and perspective towards the trial that you're going through right now. And the attitude and perspective that God has is that your trial is a testing of your faith. And maybe, depending on how you respond, a strengthening of your faith. That every trial that comes into our lives, God maybe either causes or allows to happen, and we could have all kinds of discussions about whether he causes things or he allows them to happen, but the end result is the same. God sees those trials as tests of your faith and potential strengthenings of your faith. Now, why would God do that? It's not very comforting, especially when you're going through a trial, right? And yet, I think it's because God knows that the only time in our lives that He gets our undivided attention is when we're going through trials. Because when things get messy in our lives, when things get difficult, when things get hard, we start praying and we start talking to God and we start asking Him for help and we start relying on Him and we start depending on Him and we start going to Him saying, God, I need You today. I need You to heal me. I need You to intervene here. I need You. And yet, when everything's going smooth and easy in my life, there's not much reason for me to really depend on God. There's not much reason for me to really rely on God or need God. I mean, when things are going smooth in your life or in my life, do we ever wake up in the morning and pray this prayer, God, I am not going to be able to make it through today if You don't show up in a huge way? No. But the minute we begin to go through some difficult circumstances and some difficult trials, we start coming to God and we get 100% reliant and dependent on Him. And it tests our faith and it challenges our faith. And sometimes it even exhausts our faith. But just like our muscles or our body, for those of you, and I say those of you, that work out regularly or exercise regularly, you know how this works, right? You work out and you exercise and you push yourself to the limits and sometimes you push your muscles and your body and you exhaust every ounce of energy that's in them. And yet, what's the end result? It only makes you stronger. It means next time you can lift more. It means next time you can run farther. It means next time you can do more because you're developing endurance and perseverance. And James says that's the way our faith works. And that's what trials do in our lives. They test our faith. Sometimes they even exhaust our faith. But it makes us stronger because it creates a persevering, enduring faith. He goes on in the next verse and he says, let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Now, let me ask a rhetorical question real quick. What's the key to spiritual maturity? Like, how do you know if someone is mature? Sometimes we use that word. How do you know if someone's mature in their faith? Like, how do you measure whether someone is spiritually mature? I think James would say, you know what? It's not how much a person knows. It's not how eloquent their prayers are. It's not how old they are. It's not how long they've been a Christian. It's not how many Bible studies or small groups they've led. I mean, all those things are good. But I think James would say, you want to know how mature someone is? Look at how they respond in trials. Because when someone goes through a trial and they're able to say, you know what? I'm still going to trust in You, God, and I'm going to see this the way You see it, as a testing of my faith and potentially as a way for You to strengthen and grow my faith. That's somebody that's spiritually mature. That's the process that God wants to do to mature and bring completion to our faith and to our beliefs. How does the process work? Well, I think it works like this. I'll speak personally for a second. I've got a good house, good family, pretty good job, pretty good, okay income, good like stuff, good camping equipment, good car, good schedule. Like everything in my life is pretty good. And it's pretty easy for me to trust in God in light of all of that. And yet, when things get tough, and when something is taken away, and when I go through a trial, and all of a sudden my income isn't so good, and then the stock market crashes, and my savings are not so good, And then something happens with a relationship or a friend, and that area of my life isn't so good. And something happens at work, and that's not so good. And then something happens in family, and that's not so good. You see, when all the things that gave me easy reasons to trust and believe in God are taken away, when I come through those trials in my life, if I'm able to come to a place where I can look in the face of all that adversity and all that trials of all my enemies, of everything else, all the signs in my life that might want to say that God doesn't really care and God doesn't really love you, if I can go through all that and still come to a place and say, God, I still trust you. Not because of my circumstances, because they're pretty horrible right now and everything has been taken away. So the only reason I have to trust you is just because you are who you say you are. If that's a process that God takes me through, that is the path to spiritual maturity. Which means for all of us in this room, maybe right now, probably a lot of us right now, are going through a lot of little trials in our lives. Like little things that are just irritating each day. They're just frustrating. They're just things that don't go according to plan. It means that each one of those little things are an opportunity for you to have your faith strengthened, because you can begin viewing even those little trials in a different way and with a different attitude. And yet my hunch is there's probably a few people in here who are going through some pretty significant trials, some pretty dark seasons of life. And the only thing I could say that I think James would say is, you know what? God is still with you in the midst of those trials. And I promise he is strengthening your faith in the midst of those trials. There's a guy, he's a writer, his name is C.S. Lewis. Many of you are probably familiar with him. He's a British writer, and he died about 50 years ago. But he wrote a book about this idea, and he has this great quote, and it's a little bit long, but I just wanted to read it tonight because I think his perspective on this issue is so great. This is what he says. He says, God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but he shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. I am progressing along the path of my life in my ordinary fallen and godless condition, absorbed in a merry meeting with my friends for tomorrow, or a bit of work that tickles my vanity today, a holiday or a new book, when suddenly a stab of abdominal pain that threatens serious disease, or a headline in the newspapers that threatens us all with destruction, sends this whole pack of cards tumbling down. At first, I am overwhelmed, and all my little happinesses look like broken toys. Then slowly and reluctantly, bit by bit, I try to bring myself into the frame of mind that I should be in at all times. I remind myself that all these toys were never intended to possess my heart, that my true good is in another world, and that my only real treasure is Christ. And perhaps, by God's grace, I succeed and for a day or two become a creature consciously dependent on God and drawing its strength from the right sources. But the moment the threat is withdrawn, my whole nature leaps back to the toys. And I'm even anxious, God forgive me, to banish from my mind the only thing that supported me under the threat, because it is now associated with the misery of those few days. Thus, the terrible necessity of tribulation is only too clear. God has had me for but 48 hours, and then only by dint of taking everything else away from me. Let him but sheath that sword for a moment, and I behave like a puppy when the hated bath is over. I shake myself as dry as I can, and I race off to reacquire my comfortable dirtiness, if not in the nearest manure heap, at least in the nearest flower bed. And that is why tribulations cannot cease, until God either sees us remade or sees that our remaking is now hopeless. I hope I don't go through the little trials and the big trials of my life and God looks at me and is like, this guy isn't getting it. His remaking is becoming hopeless. I hope that we can begin to see trials as God's way of remaking us, of helping us to have a true faith, not that's just inside, but a faith that lives itself out in the real world of our messy lives. Well, James goes on and he gives us a really practical piece of advice. He says, you know, you need to have this new perspective on trials, but then let me tell you what to do in the midst of trials. And he says in verse 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. See, in the midst of our trials, that's one thing that we can practically do. And maybe you've heard this verse before, but never connected it to the specific circumstance that James is addressing. But he's saying, look, in the very middle of trials, the main thing you can do is just ask God, God, would you give me wisdom so that I can have your perspective, and would you give me wisdom to know how to respond? And then he gives a quick warning. He says in verse 6, but when you ask, you must believe and not doubt, because the one who doubts is like a wave of the sea blown and tossed by the wind. That person should not expect to receive anything from the Lord. Such a person is double-minded and unstable in all they do. So James can get a little harsh sometimes, and he does that here. But he's not saying that doubts are always bad. He's not saying it's not appropriate to somehow sometimes have doubts in our lives. What he's saying is, in this specific circumstance, when you go to God and you ask God to help you out and give you wisdom in a difficult time, you need to go to Him trusting that He'll be able to provide it. And if you're still hedging your bets, like if you're going through a tough time and you're saying, God, would you please help me out? But I'm still going to work on things over here, and I'm still going to trust in myself and my abilities or my wealth or my gifts or my way of getting through this trial. Well, then you're double-minded, James says. Or I think Jesus would say, you're still serving two masters. Still trying to serve God and trying to serve yourself at the same time. And honestly, it's just not going to work. So James says, go to God, ask for wisdom, and trust that He will be the person that can provide it. And then he wraps up by addressing their specific situation and the poverty and the physical situation that they're going through. And he says this in verse 9, believers in humble circumstances ought to take pride in their high position, but the rich should take pride in their humiliation, since they will pass away like a wild flower. For the sun rises with scorching heat and withers the plant. Its blossom falls and its beauty is destroyed. In the same way, the rich will fade away even while they go about their business. So James says to the people he's writing to, I know what you're going through, and I just want you to know a day is coming. And for all the people out there that are rich and that kind of have everything in order and are in control of their lives and are running the show, you just need to know a day is coming when all of that's going to fade away. And for those of you who are kicked down, for those of you who are poor, whether in spirit or just physically poor, and you're struggling through life, you need to know too, a day is coming, either in this life or in God's kingdom to come. But a day is coming where the poor will be lifted up, where people who have been kicked down will be helped up, where the brokenhearted and the broken lives will be made new. And so if you'll just persevere, James says, if you'll stick it out, and he wraps up and he says the last thing, if you'll just do that, blessed, in verse 12, blessed is the one who perseveres under trial, because having stood the test, that person will receive the crown of life that the Lord has promised to those who love them. You see, a day is coming when we'll stand before God and He'll look at some of our lives and He'll say, look, you persevered. and you didn't always get it right, and you made some big mistakes, and you weren't always consistent. I get that. I saw it. Let's not keep talking about it. But you walked through life, and you came to a place where you ultimately began to learn to see trials the way I see them, and to allow me to strengthen your faith in the midst of those so that you could persevere. That's the kind of faith that I've always wanted you to have, and I made you to have. Now tonight, for us, there's two things that I'd like for you to do. Two things that I'd like for all of us to do. And the first is really tangible. You got a little green card when you came in tonight, and there's a verse on it. And if you didn't get one, we've probably still got some, and you can grab one on your way out. But hopefully every single person got one. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to take that little card, and I want you to put it somewhere tonight where you're going to see it every single day this week. So put it somewhere where you're going to see it the most. So if that's your computer screen or your mirror, who's laughing? Or your desk at work, or you know, somewhere, or your phone, tape it over the like where the Facebook stuff usually is. Just tape it right over that, and you'll see it like every 5 minutes. Just put it right there. But put it somewhere where you're going to see it every single day this week, and hopefully more than once a day. And here's the reason. Because it's that verse where it says, ask God for wisdom. And so I want you to be reminded, and I want all of us to be reminded, as we go through trials, and some of us, it's going to be big trials, and some of us, just little things, but it's going to happen. Like, it'll happen before 10 a.m. tomorrow. There's going to be stuff that's going to happen in your day that you are not planning, that just ruffles your feather. And you need to be reminded in that very moment, I need to stop and ask God for wisdom. I need to just ask God to give me a perspective on this, and I need to ask God to help me to respond in the right way. And everybody can do this. Wherever you are on your journey of faith, you might not even be a Christian. You might be someone that will say, I'm still not sure about the whole Jesus thing. That's okay. Take this card, and you're going to go through trials this week. And when you do, just take it and ask God to give you wisdom in the midst of that. Or maybe you would say, I've been a Christian for 40 years. It doesn't matter. You don't outgrow this. We need to, every time we face this, ask God for wisdom in the midst of our trials. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, in a couple minutes, we're going to take communion together. And I'd love for all of us, as we take communion, to ask God to give us this new perspective on our trials. And I don't think there's any place we can really go to get it than at the foot of the cross, where we can say, no matter what happens in our life, no matter what we're going through, no matter how difficult the trial is, we can know for certain that God indeed loves us, because he sent his son for us. The night before his son went to the cross, he gathered his followers and he shared a meal with them. And he took some of the bread and he said, you know what? Every time you eat this bread and break it, I want you to remember how my body was broken for you. And every time you drink from this cup, I want you to remember the trial that I went through for you. How my blood was spilt for you. So that any time in your life, if you ever doubt my goodness, if you ever come to a place where your circumstances are crowding in around you, you can always come back to this place and know that I do love you and that I am with you. And so in a couple minutes, we'll take communion, and we don't make anyone do this. This is a voluntary thing, so if you don't feel comfortable, that's totally fine. But when the band plays a song, you can just take a few moments, and then you can come up whenever you're ready and just grab a piece of bread and break it off, and then dip it in the juice or the wine. And maybe as you do that and then you eat it, almost symbolically say, I'm bringing the trials that I'm going through in my life up here, and I'm going to leave them at the table with you, God. And I'm going to ask you to give me a new perspective on these trials. Because no matter what I'm going through, whether they're small stuff, or whether you feel like right now you're walking through the valley of the shadow of death, you can ultimately say, you know what, God? I'm not going to fear anything because I know you are with me. Because you demonstrated it to me on the cross. So let me just pray for us, and then we'll take communion together. Father God, thank you for these words from James. I can only imagine what they meant to the people that he first wrote them to, who were going through such difficult times. God, I pray that tonight, as we read them together and as we reflect on them, that you would just speak to our hearts. And I pray for our week as we go about our business at work and with family and friends and appointments and different things, as we're bound to face difficult conversations or difficult people or difficult circumstances, help us to remember to just come to you, and help us to remember to ask you for wisdom. And God, as we come to the table tonight, as we take this bread and we remember what you did, this is just our way of reaffirming our faith in you. Or this is our way of maybe for the first time placing our faith and our trust in you, to say no matter what we go through, we want to trust in you. Pray all this in your Son's name. Amen.